Today I'm going to talk about loss. Experiences of loss permeate life, and there's got to be more awareness about loss that is available to us, which we don't typically grasp. Because it's such an important part of life, it makes sense that we should have a greater level of awareness about it. I want to be more aware of other perspectives on loss, because in a long life, and actually even in a short life, we're going to encounter lots and lots of loss. Since everything is energy, loss is likely to be the perception that energy we thought we had or we thought we controlled was reduced in some way. Simply stated, loss seems to follow this pattern. I had X, and now X is gone. I didn't give X away. It is just gone. I no longer have it. I've heard stories of very young children being toilet trained who cried when they were told that their poop was going to be flushed down the toilet and disappear. It was as if the children didn't want to lose that part of themselves. In the description of the four driving needs of the ego that express through the personality, and this is described in the book Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth, all four of those needs are directly related to preventing energy loss and striving for energy gain. Part of the problem with loss is a common problem with human beings. We are so five senses oriented. That means if our five senses indicate that we have X, then we believe we have X. If we can't see, hear, touch, taste, or smell X, we believe we have lost X. Because of advances in technology, people are starting to think we are living in a wireless world. We can't see radio waves, television waves, Wi-Fi signals, etc. And we have normalized life with a mobile phone stuck to our ear or through a Bluetooth headset. We don't dwell on the fact that so many modern devices and conveniences all rely on some level of invisible forms of energy in order to function and provide convenience for us. Today we think we're so great and creative as manifested beings to start using invisible energies in our lives. The truth is, more likely to be that the invisible forms of life, consciousness, have manifested as us. Consciousness has appeared as us, and now we can perceive with five senses and more if we're willing to. Again, everything is energy. All conversations, all thoughts, feelings, all words and actions seem to be about the directions or states or results of energy flow. Loss is a word that applies to the state of an energy flow away from us. Gain is a word that applies to the state of energy flow toward us. Striving, which most of us do more than not, is an effort to either move ourselves toward an energy pattern or to get an energy pattern to move toward us. We organize energy. To me, this is a helpful viewpoint that I only recently received. Organizing energy was an amazing talent that Marianne had. Now, I certainly appreciated and benefited from her abilities to organize energy, even though I didn't fully understand how she did what she did and what she was actually doing. Just that phrase or concept, organizing energy, can make doing this much easier, less overwhelming, and less complicated. And I'm grateful for having received that awareness. I'm sure that the love and the relationship that Marianne and I had existed before this lifetime. I have no doubts about that. It certainly existed during this lifetime. and I'm sure it will continue to exist, not only as long as I'm physically alive, but afterward as well. When I think of Marianne, I still have her. When I think of my failings, I'm filled with regret, guilt, grief, and loss. It puts me into the position where this proverb, or proverbial statement, the question is the glass half empty, or is the glass half full? Loss and grief are about the living. Peace and freedom and probably joy are what Marianne is experiencing right now. Even though she wouldn't be grieving because I'm grieving, she would know better. What she would be doing is she would be adding love to me and to other people to make us feel better, to make us more aware of the truth of existence. Because she protected me far better than I protected her, I have regrets on several and very deep and long ago levels. It feels as though this was a part of our agreement in this lifetime. If I focus on Marianne's life, her behaviors, I see that she was teaching me and others how to be loving, how to be kind, generous, respectful, patient, etc., etc., etc. And that list can go on and on. And she demonstrated all of that. She was teaching all of that, not by talking about those concepts, but by modeling them. She modeled those attributes. She lived those attributes. And all you had to do is pay a little bit of attention, and you would have seen the demonstration. Most people, myself included, learn through pictures, and having the images of Marianne living and loving as she did has taught me a lot about love. Dwelling on the fact that I had the most loving wife, friend, teacher imaginable, fills my glass and my heart to overflowing. If I want to berate myself, and I do, I will spill out the water. I will spill out the love. And then I'll complain that I'm not enough. Early in our relationship, Marianne made it very clear to me that she was not going to participate in diminishing me or investing in making me less. She didn't believe the negatives I voiced about myself. She only saw the good. This thought occurred to me just before I sat down the journal on December 19, 2015. Marianne held me in high regard. What better gift, what better gain could I ask for from a person as magnificent as Marianne? She held me in high regard. She didn't just say it, she showed it. Day after day for 17 and a half years. And she told me that she felt that way about me from the time when we were very small children. We've known each other since we were 5 years old. And if she had that impression of me, she held that image of me. Now, that is a gain. The risk of loss exists when we care deeply about someone or something. The fear of the pain of loss, along with the grief and regret and guilt, convinced me as a child that in order to be safe, I must not love things like pets. I hadn't lost a person, but I had lost a pet, and I don't want to love like that again. I had a pet turtle, and it was burned to death. I was about 5 years old. And I learned what anguish was the moment I discovered what happened to my turtle. The depth of my anguish was much more than a loss of a pet in this lifetime. And even as I was experiencing it as a little child, it's like, I must have tapped into an amazing reservoir of pain and loss and anguish. And that turtle knocked the lid off of that volcano. I was heartbroken for my part in this horrible death. When I was so in love with Marianne at 12 years old, I didn't know how it was possible for a 12-year-old boy to feel love so deeply. It frightened me. It frightened me. I knew at that time something was wrong. This is not a 12-year-old experience. This was something entirely different. I never told anybody about that. Not my family, parents, siblings, or Marianne. At 14, I decided the way to protect myself from my feelings was to put on armor. Armor would prevent me from having my feelings affected the way they had been previously. I put on an attitude. An attitude of, I don't care, you can't hurt me, I won't feel it. And became more like a delinquent than anything else. The decision not to feel so I could protect myself was a huge loss that I didn't realize for years. I thought it was a gain of protection. It wasn't. It was a loss. I couldn't and wouldn't feel pain. And then, as a result of that attitude, I couldn't feel joy or happiness. Marianne's toy poodle, Nikki II, the second in the bloodline, came to us for the last year of Nikki's life. She was debilitated due to age and neglect, but she was certainly lovable and capable of being loved. I took Nikki II to the vet on her last day in Kansas City, Missouri. I re-experienced anguish. I buried her in our backyard in Kansas City. In 2001, Nikki Nouveau, the third, Nikki Nouveau came into our lives. She was a beautiful, smart, and talkative toy poodle, exactly with the attributes that I was looking for. I was content not to have another puppy after the experience of the last one and early experiences of loss. You love, you lose. Even though I knew the phrase, it's better to have loved and lost and than never have loved at all. Like, okay. So, Nikki Nouveau came into our lives. She was so loving and so lovable. For 13 and a half years, in April 2015, we drove her to the vets for the last time. Marianne stayed in the car and sobbed. I went inside and held Nikki until her last breath, re-experiencing the agony of losing a precious, loving being. I have been afraid of loss for a very long time, maybe this entire lifetime, certainly at least since I was 5 years old, with my turtle experience. As a kid, my family was a bunch of Notre Dame football fans. As an older teenager in 20-something, I had to stop watching Notre Dame football games because if Notre Dame lost, I was devastated. I took it so personally, it was really painful. If they won, I didn't experience any elation or joy or victory or happiness, only the relief of, like a reprieve. It's like, whew, I dodged a bullet kind of experience. And so my strategy with regard to Notre Dame football games over the years, certainly over the 17 and a half years that Marianne and I were together this time, was either not to watch the games at all or to record them. And then, if Notre Dame lost, I would just erase the recording. If they won, I might or might not sit down and watch the game. But the best I could hope for was relief, so usually I didn't even bother to watch the games they won. But I definitely was not willing to risk the pain of loss. On our final trip to California, I watched two football games on television with Marianne and our son and his girlfriend, whose outcome was really important to me. Notre Dame versus Stanford, it was a very important game for both teams, and the New England Patriots versus the Denver Broncos. both of my teams lost, Notre Dame and the Patriots. But I survived those losses, even though before the game was over, I wanted to stop watching. And the kids insisted that we stick around and watch till the end. I wanted certainty of gain. I didn't want to risk uncertainty in which loss was a potential. But having survived those two losses in San Francisco, just a few days before we went to Sonoma County, I realized life went on even after those two teams lost. I lost Nicky Nouveau in April. I lost those two football games. And on December 3rd, I lost Mariette. The anguish is so intense, and it has been for 17 days up to this point. At times, it feels as though my breath is sucked right out of my lungs. At times, it feels like my heart is shattered, or missing entirely, or at least by half. At times, I feel as though Marianne's loss has exploded me into pieces like they do with a building that they're going to demolish before they erect a new one in places like Las Vegas or elsewhere. And so now, having exploded into pieces, I have to reassemble me into a new me. Life goes on. I haven't really lost Marianne because she still exists. I have our experiences, our memories, our stories, all those images. I have pictures of her, and I have pictures of us, and pictures of places we have gone. I have knowledge now of what love is like. When love, and that's a capital word, capital L-O-V-E, when love occupies the body of an amazingly wonderful and beautiful woman, wife, and friend, I have knowledge of that. I have a love that is only dreamed about by writers, by poets, by movie producers. You see so many chick flicks and stories, all devoted to people seeking some sort of loving relationship, some connection where they feel like they belong, where they can contribute to somebody else's happiness and have somebody else contribute to their happiness. I have had that. I have had that. I have been on the summit of the mountain that I would call unconditional love. I was carried there. I was cared for in that journey up the mountain. I didn't climb it by myself. I was brought there. I was brought to that peak by Marianne. I know that no one lives at the summit of Mount Everest, but the people who reach it, they talk about what it felt like to get there. I don't now live at the peak of that love, but I can remember it, I can feel it, and I can talk about it. That is a gain. That is not loss. Thank you, Marianne. I'd like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized and modified version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns, Reveals Startling Truth. I've included Marianne's name in it because in my lifetime, she has been the manifestation of love. If you convert love into a person, it would be Marianne. I lived with her. I loved her. I was loved by her. I was married to her. Father, Mother, Life, Marianne, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us, again and again and again. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives and our families and friends into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.